Hi, this is Rich Scheidner. If you've ever wondered what it was like to be a stand-up comedian in the 1980s, I'm going to do you a big favor. Instead of billions of dollars for a time machine, you can just spend $24.95 and buy my new book, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s Comedy Boom. It will save you money and give you thrills. It will take you there. Go to my website, richscheidner.com. Go to amazon.com and buy this book.
Hey, this is Shion McKinney, cast member of HBO's Vice Principals, and you are watching Mr. Media.
I'm Bob Andelman, and this is Mr. Media Interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my previous celebrity interviews at MrMedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, iTunes, Apple News, Google Play, or Stitcher, and please follow us on Twitter or Facebook. On today's show, I'll welcome actor Shion McKinney, who co-stars in the new HBO sitcom Vice Principals alongside Danny McBride and Walton Goggins. It airs Sundays at 10:30 p.m. Now, this is his second visit to Mr. Media. He was last here, believe it or not, in 2007 as star of the indie hip-hop drama Nemesis, which was later retitled Know Thy Enemy. Stick around. In the first couple episodes of the new HBO sitcom, Vice Principals, actor Shion McKinney's moments on screen are short but sweet. Oh, and funny. Very, very funny. By the way, my wife says you are her favorite part of the show.
Oh, tell her I said thank you. I appreciate that.
She'll appreciate that. McKinney plays the cleverly named Deshaun, a cafeteria worker at North Jackson High School who is upbeat, professional, and maybe the only one on the school staff who sees its two vice principals, played by Danny McBride and Walton Goggins, for the assholes they truly are.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of role where McKinney's character may in some ways represent the audience watching the show, kind of raising an eyebrow or cocking his head askew at the mayhem the Veeps get into.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the show airs Sundays on HBO at 10:30 p.m. Now, for me, it's really cool to see McKinney back in action. He made his first appearance on Mr. Media way back in late 2007 as the star of an indie hip-hop film, Nemesis, which was later re-released as Know Thy Enemy. I'm guessing Vice Principals is probably the big break that he's been waiting a decade for. And Shion McKinney, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Thank you for having me, my brother. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a while since Know Thy Enemy, huh?
It has. I was telling you off-air that I remember you because you were the first call-in. When we had call-in, we had the ability in 2007, the very first show, to do call-ins. And
yeah.
Your co-star, Jeremy from Nemesis, was the guest. And he and I were talking, and I knew that people could call in, but nobody knew I had a show. Nobody knew what I was doing. And there's a call. And who is it? It's Shion McKinney, the co-star of the film. I mean, what the hell? So, yeah, you'll always have a special place in the history of this show.
Well, that's good to hear, man.
So, how did you land the vice principal's gig?
Well, I had just gotten back to LA actually, and I'll try to condense the story because I've had to tell it a lot since the show premiered and news broke, but. I had actually moved back to Miami for about maybe like a year and a half or so. And at that point, I was done with wanting to pursue film. And, you know, I still have a theater company in Miami called Ground Up and Rising, shameless plug. But you can find us, groundupandrising.org. We're doing shows this summer, so go see good work in Miami. But I went home, and I was kind of content with the idea of, you know, I have my theater company that I'm proud to be a part of. And I was actually in pursuit of being a police officer in Miami and did all the preliminary training so that I could see if I could get into an academy. And while I was doing all that, I was working at a law office, and my manager that I had when I was in LA would still call me from time to time, you know, just to check up on me or to say, hey, this casting office that you went to like a year ago, a month ago, they want to see you for this role. Can you just put it on tape? And I honestly felt like I owed him that much that I would still put things on tape. But I really had no inclination of ever coming back like to L.A. I was like, that's it. I'm done. But one day I was walking to the mailbox, and I always tell the story this way because I think, I don't know, maybe somebody might need to hear it, but I was walking to the mailbox to see if I had gotten into the, it might have been the state troopers or something, because I was applying everywhere, and they had denied me. And I was on the phone with my manager at the mailbox, and he was like, hey, this audition you put on tape for this one thing, they want to see you in person. Can you fly back out just for maybe like 4 or 5 days? And honestly, I was like, I can't afford that. Like, I'm not making a lot of money at this law office, you know what I mean? So, but he was like, you know, I'll meet you halfway on it. So I came out to LA for what I thought was going to be about maybe like 4 or 5 days just to do the audition. And while I was here, my best friend, Bashir Sylvain, the tremendous actor, Bashir Sylvain, said, you know, let's go to church. And I'm like, I'm always game. You know, my faith is very important in my life. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go. And we go to this church while I'm here waiting to hear back from this audition, which wasn't Vice Principals. It was another audition. But I'm listening to this sermon, and there's a guest speaker at this church. And he keeps saying the whole time, it's time for you to make a move. You know, it's time for you to act on your faith. And I get, you can listen to any sermon and think, oh my God, Jesus is talking to me. You know what I mean? You can do that anywhere. But, it, you know, certain things were sticking out. The guest speaker was from the Bahamas. My grandmother is from the Bahamas. And I'm, you know, this is here in LA. And then he's talking about when he lived in Miami and being in Miami. And I'm like, okay, like, whatever. He closes his sermon just by saying, it's time for you to move. It's time for you to act upon your faith. Whatever obstacles you had before, he's like, God will send an earthquake to get rid of all your obstacles. And I was like, okay. I go home to my manager's place later that night, sleeping on his couch, and the entire apartment starts to shake. I cannot make this up. I am not kidding you. But it's now, for a lot of people, you can just say that's sheer coincidence. But I was just like, okay. Long story short, I decided to stay. I didn't end up getting that part that I had come out here for.
Come on, tell us what it was. What was the part?
I think it was Manhattan. They did a show about the Manhattan Project.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. But whatever, they really liked my audition, and the guy who was running the whole thing was I forget his name, so I don't want to mess. Honestly, I just forget his name, but he was a big time. He's a big deal here. I didn't know, because I always tell my manager, I don't really care who's in the room. Just give me the audition and I'll go. I don't really, people are people, whatever, you know? And, but whatever, he really liked, my work, and he gave me some words of confidence. He was like, you know, you have a lot of talent. You might want to stay. You know, he knew I was just here for the week. He was like, you might want to stay. So whatever. Another friend of mine here ended up calling me, and he's like, yo, I heard you in town. And he says, I'm leaving for like a month. You can have my place in my car because I'm just going to be gone. And I was like, okay. Like, you know.
Where was all this good stuff before you gave up on Hollywood, right?
Right. But, you know, and I'll end up tying all of that in. But, I mean, it was an obstacle that was just cleared. It was like, okay, go stay with this, you know, this dude's place. Have your own place. Have your own car. Something I never had when I was previously in LA. So I did, and I took him up on it, and I was staying there. And then another member of our theater company in Miami was moving to LA, driving across country. He calls me towards the end of me being in my buddy's place, and he's like, hey, if you're considering staying in LA, I'm going to be looking for an apartment if you want to try to find one together. Prior to that, me being in LA, I could not find an apartment. I started to look around, and I got approved like everywhere I went. Wow. So I was like, okay, my buddy gets here. We find a spot. I ended up getting an audition for another gig, and it was the first time I had ever tested for anything. For those non-actors, when you test for something, it's when they start offering you contracts. And you see how much money you stand to make or lose. So depending upon your financial situation, it's a very, very big, you know, big thing. But it was for a Netflix gig. And, you know, I tested for it. It went well. And I didn't get it. But a month and a half later, is when I got the call for the vice principal's audition. And I went into one audition, and it was a casting office that knew me previously. I went into that audition. They thought I was great. They brought me back in. And I remember sitting in the room and hearing that very distinct Danny McBride laugh. And I was like, oh, crap, like Danny's in the room. And I go in the room, I read once, and then they go, okay, now you're going to read with Danny. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. So we read, and then he kind of drops the paper and starts to improv. And I'm a theater kid. I'm used to improv. I've done street theater and whatnot. So we were going toe-to-toe for a little bit, and then that was it. And maybe like a month later, I got the call that I had gotten the part. So that's that's how Vice Principals came to me in a very long-winded version.
Oh, it's a great story, and it's you could see how you could be sitting in the church and thinking, this guy is talking right to me. I don't know what my friend is doing here. This guy is talking right to me, and then everything that happened, it just seemed to And how long had you been in Hollywood before that? Before you left to go back to Miami, when none of that happened?
Yeah, I was there about 5 years on and off, like somewhat bi-coastal, because I would go home to do a show every now and then for our company. And those 5 years that I was here before, I was never fully committed to the idea of doing film. Bashir is my best friend. He had moved here. My girlfriend at the time had moved to L.A. So I came here, and I think it's very easy to come to L.A. and you can get bitter, you can get upset, and you can let this place, it can eat at you, And if you aren't somewhat grounded or focused or don't know what you want, you just become, for me, I just wasn't in a good place. And I think I had to go home. I had to go home to kind of get regrounded and realize what I first started acting for, and I was always in it because I felt like it's one of the very few things where I could express myself freely, and I know it's going to provide a platform to, affect change. And if you let those things get convoluted and messed up, it's very easy to just get to LA and be like, this place is a madhouse. But when I came back here, even when I started going to auditions, when I first got back, it was just so much easier because I think I let go of a lot of things I had to let go of and come back and get refocused. And, now I can appreciate how beautiful LA is. You know what I mean? And I didn't like things that I would look at every single day when I was here before. And just now I see it and I'm like, wow, that's actually a beautiful place.
That's amazing. Now I got to ask you, cause I'm personally curious. I think we connected on Facebook several months back the first time, and I that had happened on my end because I was updating the old page for Nemesis Know Thy Enemy, and I thought, I should see. Maybe Shion is on Facebook now, and there you were. And, of course, by then, you already knew you had shot the first season and probably were already shooting the second season at that point, if that's and so had you been on Facebook before, or is that Facebook kind of new for you?
That's a funny question. I had always had this adverse sentiment towards any social media because, I think I grew up, I'm born and raised in Miami, for those who don't know, and I grew up in Coconut Grove and Richmond Heights. I have to say both places or they won't let me back in. but, I grew up in a sort of culture where it was like, you mind your business. You know what I mean? Like, you mind your business and don't get involved in other people's business. So I remember when social media kind of first came onto the scene, for me, I was just like, this just wasn't something I was into. And then when I moved to LA and, at the behest of like my manager and close friends, they were like, well, you might want to get on social media. So I remember opening a Facebook page and just kind of, having it. And then I shut it down for maybe like a year and a half. I'd shut it down. And then when I left Miami and I came back, being in like a new mind frame, I was just like, I see what it's for now. And then, that's when I put it back up.
And it's nice, especially when you have a gig like you do now, your friends can see, can hear about it, and they can. I've seen your friends are very supportive, and they love seeing good things happen to you.
So yeah,
it's one of those things. You know, people talk about, I don't want to know what you had for lunch, but but if you're my friend, I want to know that you're doing well, right?
Right. Yeah. And I guess that's the that's the way to look at it, because even now, having like a publicist and all this stuff, like it's very odd for me to even put that stuff on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, because you feel like you're bragging on yourself sometimes. But, I understand that you have to, quote unquote, you have to navigate this business. You got to build your brand. You got to stay relevant and whatnot. And, and like you said, it's very humbling to see how many people actually do truly, support you and care about, how well you're doing.
Absolutely. All right. So I should ask you a little bit about Deshaun. So I've been able to see the first two episodes. I thought I might have had access to more last night, but I didn't. So I've only seen the first two. My guess is that just from the prominence that your name gets in the opening credits, that as the series goes on, you must have more and more to do. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you just got to keep watching. Deshaun is pretty much the voice. You hit it on the head. He's pretty much the voice of reason for Danny's character. And I think Deshaun's allegiance is always to Danny, to Neil Gamby, to the character, where I agree with his core principles as they are, but I don't agree with his tactics.
Right, yeah.
how he's going about things. And Deshaun, he keeps it real with him, 100%. And I think we all have those friends, and even in a workspace, people that they're just cool. They're themselves and extremely comfortable in their own skin, and they keep it 100% real with you. And like you said, he's kind of got that mind and that ear of the audience watching these two dudes go crazy and just standing back and being like, hey, that ain't right.
There's a scene in the second episode. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a scene in the second episode where they break into a house.
Yeah.
Right? And we're watching it, and my wife and I have been both waiting for that moment where the show just kind of clicks. Oh my God, I thought she was going to fall off the couch. I still can't. She said to me when we went to sleep last night, she said, I don't know, I just started laughing at it, and it just was so funny. It was so bizarre, and she just laughed and laughed and laughed, and you opened that show. You're at the very beginning of that show, and that was funny. By the way, was the character, was it pot, or was it just a – what was he smoking there?
What's funny is I've gotten that question from I don't ever read any, I don't ever read reviews of anything that I've ever done, but somebody told me that there was a review that said that Deshaun is really funny even though he's high, and in my head I'm like, I don't ever recall smoking marijuana during the character smoking marijuana during the show. But it's just a vape. He's just smoking a vape. That's it. But if you want to think that it's marijuana, that's hey.
Well, that's what I don't know. You couldn't tell. He was smoking, right? He was vaping at the beginning of the show. And who knows? I know people can put pot in one of those. You can,
Yeah.
And so and maybe it's a very racist thing to think that he's on the job and he's
in the back smoking.
He's getting
weed.
Lit. Yeah. And actually, I wanted to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. Both of those the lead characters, Goggins' character Lee and McBride's character Neil, they both are more Neil, I guess, so far. But they both appear to be racist. They both appear to be misogynistic. That's on first thought. Now, on second thought, I think they just hate everybody. They resent everybody, right?
Yeah, and I think it's. Obviously, with where we are now in society, the political climate that we have going on, there are some that will watch, and I don't know, maybe they have an adverse reaction, to it. But I think as a whole, when you can look at characters like that and you can see how flawed people are, how flawed all of us are, and when you can take that part of it and watch it and watch that, no matter what they think, those two characters – there's a beautiful, smart, intelligent black woman in charge running the show. And they can do whatever they want, but that is what's going on. And I think we also have to be able to laugh at some things and see the humor, but you can see how outrageous they are. You know what I mean? And yes, they are equally offensive.
Yeah, they are.
There are no holds barred. You know what I mean? They are equally offensive and unapologetic, you know, about it. But I will say this, as you continue to watch, you will find yourself with every one of these characters finding something, I don't know, redeemable, relatable. And, you know, I don't think, in my opinion, having been around for the duration of this show, that, you know, it's not written with the intent to, I'm going to flat out offend like this person. You're just watching two outrageous people, you know, and of course you can liken them to, you know, a person who is 100% misogynistic or racist or whatever. But you have to watch what unfolds and watch what, you know, what comes out of it.
I'm curious to see what happens with Dr. Brown, who is the African-American woman who's the principal of the school. And by the way, Dr. Brown, really? They had to be that obvious, right?
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's her name, Dr. Brown. And some of these things, it's a credit to the writing that some of these things are, you know, meant for us to discuss and have discourse. And I think my opinion is always that we need to have open and honest discourse about these things, or else all we ever do is just state an opinion very loudly. And everybody stands on two sides, and that's where we stay. Nothing happens. We don't ever work towards a solution. You know what I mean? And I think great art is supposed to make you talk, and it's supposed to make you think. It's supposed to make you emote and you know, talk to the person next to you and go, how did you feel about this? Because this is how I felt about it. And realize somebody else may see it from a completely different angle than what you saw, and you're watching the same thing. Yeah.
Well, that's all very intelligent. Sean, very, you know, very thoughtful. But I was just about to say that I'm expecting that Dr. Brown's character might turn into a bit like Dean Wormer on Animal House. I mean, the second episode, she brings in this guy with the beard and the ponytail who's very mysterious, who's doing her dirty work. And I thought it reminded me of Animal House, where at one point Dean Wormer says, put Niedermeyer on it. Put that little shit Niedermeyer on it. You know, and I just thought, okay, you know, because clearly this is a woman who can fight fire with fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect she will get down and as dirty as the vice principals, right?
She is not backing down.
No, that's what I figured.
And she's a brilliant, brilliant actor. Brilliant actor.
And do you have scenes with her as the series goes on?
I don't. I think so. I think all of us at some point in the, we know we all interact. So, yeah, I think everybody does, yeah.
So I was just reading that the series had screened a preview reel at Comic-Con this past week.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, I didn't go, but I saw that. Yeah, they did screen at Comic-Con and at South by Southwest as well. Hmm. Yeah.
And so the series has shot a second season, but it's going to be two and done. Is that correct?
I don't know. I have no idea. Danny and his crew, the whole Rough House crew, Jody Hill and David Gordon Green and all their writers, they do sometimes write with the intent of just kind of, let's just hit it and that's it. But I don't know. I do know that, you know, when we first came on board, it was written a certain way, ended a certain way. And then it, as things do, they morph, they change, they grow. So you never know. You know, all I know is we've shot two seasons, and that's where we are right now.
So you've got two seasons worth of paychecks. Tell me, how is it affecting your marketability in Hollywood now? You've got a reel now to show that is far more developed than what you had.
It obviously it gives you just alone saying that you're on an HBO half hour comedy, that's top tier in Hollywood. It definitely increases your profile, where before I booked it, you know, it's for those who don't understand how acting works out here. It's when they tell you that everybody in LA is an actor, they are not lying to you. Everybody in LA is an actor. And sometimes all you have to set you apart is what you've done, what you're doing, and what you're creating, you know, on your own. So to have something like that attached to my name, it opens a lot of doors, you know, and I was able to get into a lot more rooms, you know, this past pilot season. And, got a great agency behind me, and my manager's always been my same manager, Tash Mosley Management, greatest manager ever. I was able to sign with a wonderful, wonderful agency and have great agents over there. And it definitely increases your profile, you know, and to be able to walk in the room and say that you're on a current HBO show, you know, and people pay attention. What are you doing? Then it's up to you from there to show the talent that you've always had, but now you're finally getting the chance to let some of it, you know, some of it come out. So it definitely helps.
Well, and you've got two have aired. How many were there? 10? Were there 13?
There is 9 per season. Nine episodes.
Yeah. So you've got 7 more to unspool for the first season, then 9 more then. So you've got, you know, the better part of 2 years of this and all the reruns that, you know, because it airs round the clock on, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's good. So is there a next project lined up? Do you know what you're doing next?
I'm mostly more excited about writing my own work, creating my own work, being a member of a theater company, and always having that mindset. You know, we started a theater company with the idea that we couldn't wait around for anybody to give us any opportunities. And the opportunities that were being provided were, you know, somewhat typical of you know, hey, we need, you know, somebody to play this role.
Yeah.
You know, so as a, you know, instead of waiting for something, we decided to start our own company. And Bashir and I have our own web series that we had done. It's called Make It Happen. You can find it on Vimeo. We got about 7 or 8 episodes of that up on Vimeo. And being around that crew from Vice Principals, the whole Rough House team, I mean, they are a group of friends who started in North Carolina. You know, they didn't go to some huge school. They didn't go to a Strasbourg or you know, study overseas or go to, you know, NYU or whatever. Not to say anything about those top tier schools, but just for people who can relate to go, you don't have to do that to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, and these are a group of friends who believed in the talent that they had and created work, and being around them, and they were so gracious when we were there on set. They, you know, I was on set even when I wasn't shooting, just trying to soak everything up and learning from them and learning from all the brilliant writers that they have. But, you know, it just sparked that idea and that hunger to continue to write. So I'm currently working on a feature that I think is going to be great, writing that and trying to write a show at the same time. And, you know, I have a wonderful agency that once it's done, I can sit it on their desk. Another friend of mine has approached me with possibly playing one of the craziest roles I've ever seen. But if you've ever seen a film, it's a very cult type film. It's called The FP. You can find it on iTunes. It's by Jason Trost. He's a crazy, crazy director and writer, but he's got this crazy film. He wrote a sequel, and he approached me about playing the villain in the second movie. So there are things on the books and some things I'm very excited about, but mostly I am excited about creating my own work. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, folks, listen, you can watch Sean McKinney. He will steal scenes from Danny McBride and Walton Goggins in the new HBO sitcom Vice Principals. It's Sundays at 10:30 p.m. Do you have a website?
You can find me on Twitter at Sheaun305. That's Sheaun. And most people are going to go, that sounds like Sean. It's not Sean.
No, it's
Sheaun. You know, and you can find me on Instagram, Sheaun McKinney, and Facebook, Sheaun McKinney. And again, go on to Vimeo.com. You can find Make It Happen and watch our web show, and groundupandrising.org. If you want to see great theater in South Florida, go support.
Excellent. Well, Sheaun McKinney, I am so happy to see you doing well and finally getting your due. I told you it's great for me to have people come back on the show even after this length of time and see that things are on the rise. So good for you, and thanks for joining us, Mr. Media, today.
Thank you, man. Anytime. I appreciate it. We'll be right back.
passive believer. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of men and women who blame everything that went wrong in their lives on their high school principal, and I'm looking at you, James Salvatore, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Okay, before you go, I just want to remind you that Audible.com was our sponsor today, and you can get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow. TRYNOW. Again, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow. I don't know about you, but that Johnny Cash biography as read by Kris Kristofferson, I think I'm going to grab that one right now.